Blog Talk Radio.
To the Reader by Charles Baudelaire, translated by Robert Lowell. Infatuation, sadism, lust, avarice possess our souls and drain the body's force. We spoon-feed our adorable remorse, like whores or beggars nourishing their lice. Our sins are mulish, our confessions lies. We play to the grandstand with our promises. We pray for tears to wash our filthiness, importantly pissing hogwash through our styes. The devil watching by our sickbeds hissed, all smutton folk songs to our soul until the soft and precious metal of our will boiled off in vapor for this scientist. Each day his flattery makes us eat a toad, and each step forward is a step to hell, unmoved through previous corpses and their smell, asphyxiate our progress on this road. Like the poor lush who cannot satisfy, we try to force our sex with counterfeits, die drooling on the deliquescent tits, mouthing the rotten orange we suck dry. Gangs of demons are boozing in our brain, ranked, swarming like a million warrior ants. They drown and choke the cistern of our wants. Each time we breathe, we tear our lungs with pain. If poison, arson, sex, narcotics, knives have not yet ruined us and stitched their quick, loud patterns on the canvas of our lives, it is because our souls are still too sick. Among the vermin, jackals, panthers, lice, gorillas and tarantulas that suck, and snatch and scratch and defecate and fuck in the disorderly circus of our vice. There's one more ugly and abortive birth. It makes no gestures, never beats its breast, yet it would murder for a moment's rest and willingly annihilate the earth. Its boredom, tears have glued its eyes together. You know it well, my reader, this obscene beast chain-smokes yawning for the guillotine. You, hypocrite reader, my double, my brother.
Wow, what a powerful intro. That was the open of To the Reader, and that is of The Flowers of Evil by Charles Baudelaire, who we are featuring tonight on All Poetry's number one show and largest group, Late Night Poets. And this is our show. I'm your host. My name is Richard Weissman. This is In Our Craft or Sullen Art. And I've got two callers on hold. Let me bring, I believe the first one is my substitute co-host, Babbler. Is that you?
It is.
Yep. There you are. Welcome. So I am going to bring on our other caller. I believe it's Laurent. In a sec. Is that
good
is
evening.
That you,
well met, Richard. Well met, Babbler. Well met, AP.
Well, to both of you for showing up for our celebration of Charles Baudelaire. And what do you guys think of that intro? So, Laurent, I wanted to get your feedback on, and I know you asked who is our reader for that one.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. Combination of the words with the voice that shivers down my spine. You see, such a good reader, and those are such good words to read. Baudelaire was...
Yeah.
In some ways, almost a mixed blessing when you contrast his life with his poetry.
Yeah, painful. And we're going to get into some of that, too. Some people wrote kind of informal poetic bios of Baudelaire mm-hmm. as their offerings for tonight.
Guilty.
And Babbler, your thoughts on that intro. What'd you think?
I really loved the dramatics of the performance. I thought was really well done. It felt just very foreboding and kind of ominous, just the tone. I didn't have the words to read in front of me. I wish I had. But overall, I just thought it was thinking of the right word. It reminds me of, like, listening to radio shows when I was a kid. So I didn't grow up with television. I grew up out in the woods, so we had a hand crank radio, and I would listen to, like, old radio dramas. And that's what it reminded me of. Oh, had some nostalgia.
Very cool. Yeah. Let's see if I can find a translation. So here's the tricky thing. He wrote in French, and everything was quite lyrical and rhymed. And so it's up to the translators as to whether they translate more kind of on the nose and lose the lyricism and lose the rhyme, or they're a little more creative, go a little away from the text, but retain the rhyming verse. And this is kind of like a debate amongst translators and literary scholars, like, which way do you want to go? And Robert Lowell, I mean, an amazing poet in his own right, decided to preserve the rhyming. And I think, honestly, he does a wonderful job. I know that in more recent years amongst more modern contemporary critics, he took a lot, you know, he's taken kind of heat for it. But honestly, I think with the right reader, which Tom O'Bedlam was, I really don't think you lose much, because I've read the non-rhyming translations, and I think you get the gist of it, and you retain the beauty of rhyming poetry. So anyway, that's my two cents, but of course, it's all up for debate.
That's the trick with translated poetry,
okay,
right? Just in general. Anyway.
Yeah,
but that's why...
especially.
That's why the greatest works of art have multiple translators.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. And the tricky thing about him in particular, Baudelaire, is that it all rhymes. So,
yeah,
you know, now you've got this, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to make it rhyme, or are you going to go for on-the-nose, point-by-point translation as much as possible? So I don't know. I liked what Robert Lowell did. So call me old fashioned, but I think it worked. Okay. So I know we have a big board, and I am just going to turn it over to you, Babbler. Wherever you want to go, it is your choice.
All right. I figured we'd start with Neutron's poem, since she's not here, but she did give us something to read. And if you want to go ahead and start us off, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Sure. So this is called Life is for the Living by my co-host, Neutron Baum. It was inspired by Prompt 12. You are sitting and smoking. You believe that you are sitting in your pipe and that your pipe is smoking you. You are exhaling yourself in bluish clouds. You feel just fine in this position. And the only thing that gives you worry or concern, how will you ever be able to get out of your pipe? So that's the quote, and here's where she ran with it. It's called Life is for the Living by Neutron Baum. Weed is the gateway hard drugs. Well, my money is on musk candy cigarettes, breathing in the heavy secondhand smoke-filled air. Water droplets expired from my mouth as a 90s kid mimicking the crusty, tar-stained hands of Uncle Barry. Breathing fire from asthmatic lungs, the ritual of rolling was viewed with intention. Curiosity killed Barry. He died of lung cancer. I painted squiggly lines with flaming ink onto butcher's paper and took it to the hospital. oxygen-filled tubes and glazed eyes cloaked the stoicism of a dying man. Chop up and add spin. Pack a cone piece and prepare the apparatus. This molasses that sticks to my insides is a panacea, a cure with a fleeting half-life that demands my diaphanous predilection cease before I spiral down the foxhole. Flesh wounds progress. Mere gangrenous wounds that seem to heal slowly with the pack-a-day habit. I will polish my plaque-covered canines and pull up my bootstraps. A leather chrysalis will suffocate its incumbent eventually. Stasis ensues. End of poem. And Dabbler, as my guest co-host, I'll give you first word. What do you think?
I really liked it. I think it has that kind of classic Neutron flavor of grit to it, which I always appreciate. You know, life is for the living. And yet, in both part one and part two of this piece, it's really more about the dying. You know, you've got this kind of recounted tale in the first portion about being young and watching Uncle Barry succumb to lung cancer as a result of the smoking that he couldn't quit. You know, and but to already be kind of hooked on it, you know, even though you're watching the warning, you're holding your little candy cigarettes and pretend smoking because that's what you see around you, you know, mimicry. You know, and if it says mimicking the crusty, tar-stained hands of Uncle Barry, you know, and that being like the real gateway, right? That you do what people around you do, you know, you're cultured in that way. You know, to then the second part where, you know, now I've got your own smoking habit, you know, that seems even more dark than perhaps Uncle Barry's smoking habit because it's through the lens of like the actual smoker. And you get some really great word choices in here. You know, this molasses that sticks to my insides is a panacea, a cure-all with a fleeting half-life. You know, just this thick, tarry substance because, I mean, that's really what the nicotine is. You can see it on the walls if you're around heavy smokers. You know, and in the description here, you know, the flesh wounds progress to near gangrenous wounds that seem to heal slowly. You know, to just know that you're slowly killing yourself because you saw it done before. And knowing that if you don't change, you're doomed to that same fate. And yet that's the choice you seem to be making. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was gristly, but well done. Of nostalgia and just like later, you know, reflection of it. And it's almost guilty, but it's like strong-jawed guilty. I really enjoyed it. It felt very gritty, especially as a fellow child of the 90s who, you know, had plenty of candy cigarettes as a child, you know, and little bubble pipes. You know, it's interesting all of the various smoking apparatus they gave children in the 90s. You know, they don't do that so much anymore for good reason. But, you know, in the 90s, yeah, there were candy cigarettes, there were bubble pipes, there were powder pipes, all kinds of like, here's cigarettes for children. You know, I'm surprised they didn't have like cartoon bongs, but you know, I guess it was the time, right? So I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was very well done.
Great, great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, that was a really eloquent comment. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a remarkable poem by Neutron. Hype becomes life. Each breath a flesh wound working its way through old wood, through old lungs, betraying stoicism, eventually leading the dying man out of his composited quarters of wood and car. Moving right, it's a eulogy of sorts for a moment.
Excellent comment, yeah. Yeah, you guys really, between the two of you, really nailed it. I, too, really love this piece. I like what you said, Babbler, about nostalgia, because it kind of takes nostalgia and turns it upside down. It's like the dark side of nostalgia, you know, remembering, and it's also kind of chip stacked against us remembering how we got into this mess of tobacco addiction and knowing where it'll ultimately lead. I thought it was visceral, emotive on tobacco and its thanatos consequences. I liked this take on the prompt. I thought it was very ingenious. And it did kind of have the Baudelaire vibe to it, while simultaneously being pure neutron. So great way to open the show, and nice to have her here in spirit. And hopefully she'll be well enough to join us in 2 weeks. Okay, with that, we are ready for our next one.
All righty, get her up here. I got away from the page somehow. Sorry about that.
No worries. It happens.
All right. So the next one up is by Guilty. And it's called Live from a Fun City, a True Story. I'll go ahead and give this one a read. A wounded animal, recoiling from the sound, phallic towers fell, shattered to the ground. Survivors gather spirits, patching old wounds, fragile unity among red, white, and blue. Flag on every corner, a few windowsill, plenty of bumper stickers, even 2 years still. An afternoon in August, sweltering heat, blew out power grid. And darkness fell on Fun City. Rattled by visions of two Septembers before, the black morning filled with smoke. Panic masses wondered what this was all about. Buses crowded to the hilt, rushing to abandon the city. Natives embraced the madness, as New Yorkers do. In Soho, they sipped lattes in French cafes. Hell's Kitchen porn stars displayed their ample wares free of charge for anyone who dared. Upper West Side, the fairway on Broadway gave away ice cream to all the passerby. Evening came on Seaman. Avenue night turned cool as news spread of the grid. No foul play was understood. Contrast to 77 when streets burned. The city breathed a sigh of relief. Night was a cool peace, snuggled between the beneath the moon's loving arms. End the poem.
Excellent read. What a wonderful take on prompt four, which was, what strange phenomena we find in a great city. All we need do is stroll about with our eyes open. Life swarms with innocent monsters. And, first things first, I love New York. I, you know, grew up there. I lived there as an adult. And definitely know that city. And I think that Baudelaire, if he lived in our age, would have loved New York, especially the New York of the 1970s. My wife and I, moved out of New York City before the towers fell, but I returned for business travel and was struck by the quote-unquote community that Guilty writes of in its aftermath, which was not the New York City that I grew up in. Though the neighborhoods each little neighborhood always did kind of have that, your neighbors kind of watch out for each other. I thought this was a really interesting take on the prompt. It was intensely personal, and yet Guilty shows the universal emotion held in the city. It was a wonderful panoramic retelling, a nice take on the prompt. And Babbler, your thoughts on it?
I really enjoyed this. First of all, you know, calling it Fun City and then opening with the line, a wounded animal, you know, it's such a contrast. It's like not what you expect to read when you read a title that says live from Fun City, you know, and just reading about the towers falling and the way, you know, things changed, you know, survivors gathering, patching old wounds, you know, and just these specific things. So this has happened 2 years in the past, and then to go 2 years into the future, and there's a power outage, and just, you know, it's still fresh. You know, 2 years before is not that far before. So, you know, it's that unspoken panic that kind of sits in the back of everyone's mind. You know, is this another terrorist attack? You know, is this another event? You know, what's going on? But rather than, you know, spend too much time dwelling on that, you know, they embraced the madness. You know, people still drinking coffee, porn stars giving out freebies, you know, like, you know, the interesting ways that people react once terror was kind of, in a way, familiar. You know, it's interesting. I think it's a great way to document that kind of change in, you know, societal behavior. You know, me not being from New York, although my siblings lived in New York, so it certainly was a long wait to hear that phone call, you know, but waking up, getting ready to go to school in the morning to this, you know, this on the news, everyone calling, saying, turn on the TV. You know, I'm waiting for my siblings to call, you know, especially my sister Tina, who at the time worked in the trade towers for Department of Homeland Security. So she still works there, but not there. She's fine. But it was a nice breath held for a phone call, especially since my brother-in-law is also a police officer. So, I think these kind of poems are great for documenting, you know, not just the facts, but the emotion of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Really great comment. And Laurent, I'll give you final word on the piece. What'd you think?
It's relatable in so many ways. Like you, I lived in Richard, I lived in New York City from the age of 4 to 8 on Cougar Avenue in the Bronx. And when you travel around the city, especially in August, it can be a noisome, energetic, worrisome place. There's so many avenues split into different directions, both emotional and physical. And you know, by the way, that title, I'm sure, was delivered in ironic intent. And to describe the city as a wounded animal is not necessarily incorrect, because an animal can be almost anything in its reaction to circumstances, to input. And if you have towers falling to the ground, you have a power grid blowing out and darkness falling on, quote-unquote, Fun City, well, we all know that's not so much fun, but the panic masses probably don't live there. But the natives will embrace the madness, as New Yorkers do, in Soho. They sip lattes in French cafes. And what he says is true. There's a certain amount of nonchalance, it's a long word, but acceptance. When things explode in your face, it's almost a shrug of the shoulders saying, well, you know, it's no foul play. It's not 1977. And yet the city will breathe that sigh of relief of nightfall. I thought it was a very powerful piece, well worth our time.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Babbler, where would you like to go next?
So, next, I have up Media District by Joe Braz. So that's up on the board. And if you want to go ahead and give that a read, Richard, that'd be great.
Sure. So this is Joe Braz. It's called Media District. So this is a different city, but same prompt. And I will give it a read. I think of the dogs when pups torn from their mother's nipple thrust into the Iditarod, collapse and panting on crusty, bloodied snow, eyes frozen shut. No doubt in quiet repose of siblings surrounding suckle, warm safety, no reason to fear any other, as the cold, hard hands yanked off the tiny babes. Even the bitch, no choice, no voice to see her child taken without tenderness. All she had were her children ignored there on her breast and bed. Respite, no, nor warm, nor quiet. I see my city of angels, rows of cabanas, craftsmen's mail-order homes now sold for millions only to raise them, make way for the neo-cookie-cutter urban four-story good-living three-bedroom, three-bath luxury apartments by wise man, wise ass, I sass, the people paying $6,000 and $7,000 a month rent don't belong in this neighborhood, came from other places, their faces, thieves, racists, arrogant without merit, taking ownership of my sidewalks, my trees and corners. The stores sparkle with the novel lighting, clear windows, subterranean parking, and security guards. Do I see this because I am an old man now? Did old men see it in my youth and new to the neighborhood? All change covers up. I see through the translucent facades of new, the cottages of the muse, mulberry bushes, birds of paradise to line the gleaming sidewalks and borders between bungalows. The old and the real stand out, not behind, within, and of the new city of angels here in my neighborhood named Media District. End of poem. And Laurent, if we could start with you, what'd you think of this one?
Quite good. I read my first poem by Joe Braz earlier today. I was impressed with that one, equally with this one. The metaphor of dogs when pups born from their mother's nipple thrust into the Iditarod, collapsed and panting on crusty blooded snow, eyes frozen shut, is a grabber, but the metaphor works because it's almost as if the people who lived in the neighborhood, the longtime residents who now suffer through gentrification, are the pups torn away from the breast that gave them suckle. It's a gorgeous piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, you know, so... It's funny because these two pieces, these are my two cities. So as an adult, I moved to California and lived in LA for a few years. A long story, but I was there during the riots, the LA riots, and I know Media District, and you know that I lived in lots of areas, but one of them was Glendale, which was kind of a tough working class neighborhood. So tough that in fact during the riots they didn't have curfews or any of that stuff. And his account of Media District and what it was like kind of reminds me of Glendale. I know it's a different area, but I kind of felt that. And I enjoy the poem's reflective self-awareness regarding urban shifts and nostalgia. And think the words rang through throughout, but especially, do I see this because I'm an old man now? Did old men see it in my youth and new to the neighborhood? Very well done. And Babbler, I'll give you final word on this one.
I really enjoyed this write, just open with the metaphor of the dogs and the pups, you know, to be ripped away from the mother, you know, your mother neighborhood, your mother land, you know, however you want to phrase that, you know, and thrust into the Iditarod, which to me, you know, is like, oh, you know, you're a member of the working class now, you know, the rat race. You know, and no longer even able to go back to the places that you're from because you can't afford to live there. You know, it's not to the same scale, but like I grew up in a trailer park that was really full of meth labs and crime, just constant crime, and drug use. Just, I mean, there were literally signs everywhere that says if you suspect a prostitution, if you suspect a meth lab, call this number, like up every block. And it has since been like gutted and is now cookie cutter homes. And it's really weird to go there because it feels very fake and very odd to be there. You know, it's not quite to the same level, but, you know, it's the same kind of concept. I did also really enjoy that idea, you know, do I see this because I'm an old man now? Like, has this always been the way it is, and it just feels more egregious now because I'm looking through the lens of back, you know, to have the long enough memory to see that change. You know, I really enjoyed it. I do also really like some of the wordplay that's in here and the word choices. I think were really great. Three bedroom, three bath luxury apartments by Wiseman, wise ass, eye sass, the people, you know, the play from Wiseman to wise ass to eye sass, you know, this kind of interlinking repetition of sound, I think is really well done. There it makes it link up nicely. There's a couple places in here like that I really liked. You know, and the different descriptions of the layers of cookie cutter, you know, like they were mail order homes. You know, originally they were rows of cabana craftsmen, which means they're still similar style homes, and then mail order homes. And now they're neo cookie cutter homes. Like you can rename it as much as you want. It's the same thing. You're replacing the old with the new, and every time it's something, you know, that's repetitive. So it's like iterations of new repetitions. So I really liked that observation as well. I enjoyed this write. I thought it was very well done, and I really enjoyed that opening metaphor in particular.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. Okay. So with that, we are ready for our next one, and I see it's up on the board. And who would you like to have read it?
If Laurent could give that one a read, that would be great.
All right. A Letter to Baudelaire by Jenny Middleton. Dear Monsieur Baudelaire, is it because your flower words drip velvety fur and are so full of other women's forgotten silk that you said I shouldn't read your poems? I, being me, that is a woman, a daughter and a wife, not yours, but other men's. Or was it because you didn't want women like me to know how many of society's ills you conjured into a coiling female form? But here it is. I did read your words, except I listened to you through a pop song first. Is that bad? Badder than a book? I heard your prose poem, Les Yeux de Pauvre, made into a song. How beautiful are you? Sang by The Cure, band that I listened to as a teenager, Greener Than the Shade You Dyed Your Hair, sang by a man who spun the scent of your words in a perfume panted up from guitar strings and into the music of pouting modern mouths. Is this just the same as written words creeping up from paper into readers' lips transcending centuries? Or do you think your prose has been hammered out of its poetry into pop? I wouldn't have lasted a minute in your 19th century. Respectability and sin, twin dogs yapping at my crinoline, excluded from the quiet talk of men, from education, and of even reading your poetry by you, just as much as by the bourgeois man, the ones you said that you didn't want to become, who sat dining in private salons and banned the publication of your work as their wives arranged flowers and discussed luncheon menus, and didn't need poems either. They rolled linen napkins and slid them into silver rings, slimming and tightening as their corsets. I wonder what you'd make of 21st century morality. I don't think you'd last a minute here either. So much of what you consider to be decadent, now accepted by society, and so many of your attitudes towards women permitted in the 19th century, are now rightly revived. Europe is a place where even women like me can choose to buy books filled with your restless, violent seeds, and if we want, sail with those jeweled, indolent creatures glowing in your ink, or else not to, and snap pages. End point.
Excellent read there, Laurent. Yeah, what a tight little piece of prose poetry this is. It was written in response to prompt 2, which is always be a poet, even in prose. And my gosh, does this fit the bill. It's thought-provoking throughout. And there's just so much to say about it. She handles the sexism and double-edged sword of censorship, the banning of Baudelaire's writing, and his own ironic desire to censor his writings from women. I think specifically when he was talking about women, he was talking about like his wife and kids. And Jenny handles it all with deftness and wisdom, all the while adhering to his admonishment in the prompt, always be a poet, even in prose. I thought it was thought-provoking, sans any preachiness. And it's always interesting when we look with our lens at societal norms and morality and how different members of society are being treated in those times, seeing it through our contemporary lens. It's a tricky, tricky little journey. And I think she handles it quite admirably. She doesn't get preachy, but simultaneously, she does hold up one human being, regardless of what age they live in, to what I kind of feel is the universal law of, would you want to be treated that way? And in that way, rightly finds Baudelaire's admonition against women reading his work wanting. And so it's a great feminist piece. And Babbler, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed this because there's a sense of, I mean, it's like rage and empowerment kind of tucked and buried in here. You know, this letter to him going, you told me not to read this. You know, is it because you're ashamed? Is it because you didn't want me to be exposed to your opinions? You know, like, you know, or is it just because, you know, that's how women were treated in the past, you know? And what really caught my eye, especially, was at the end, you know, the Europe is a place where even women like me can choose to buy books filled with your restless violet seas, and if we want, sail with those jeweled, indolent creatures glowing in your ink, or else not to, and snap the pages shut. Like, I have the right to read this now. I have the ability to read this. I have the freedom to read this, or I cannot. And not because I can't, but because I just don't want to. And, you know, that's really kind of what having freedom to do things is all about. It's like, yeah, I can, but I don't have to expose myself to this. And then I also really enjoyed this middle stanza where she reflects on what it have been like to put herself into the shoes of a woman in the 19th century, you know, in the era of Baudelaire, you know, to be harassed essentially by the ideas of respectability and sin, you know, to have to kind of balance between these two dogs, you know, pulling at underskirts, you know, and try to, you know, not be part of the, you know, the of educated men, and instead be kind of relegated to private salons where you just arrange flowers and sort cutlery. But there's some really beautiful language tucked in here too. You know, you know, comparing the silver rings to the women's corsets, I thought was really lovely. I also really liked, hunting for the words now. I liked, is this just the same? Oh, here it goes. Sang by a man who spun the scent. So we're talking about scent now, of your words into a perfume panted. So now it's like a breath, like an odor of breath. From guitar strings, which can't pant, and then into music of pouting modern mouths. I just love the twisting from one sense to another there. You know, it's like almost a repeated personification, you know, switching from one thing to the next, that makes beautiful poetic sense, but almost no literal sense. So I really loved the twisting of language in that line in particular. I thought it was wonderfully done to take it like an odor of words into a perfume that's panted from a guitar string and then put into the mouth of modern music. I thought it was really creative and very well done. I enjoyed this from Jenny quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Great analysis. And Laurent is our reader. I'll give you final word. Are you on mute?
Yes, unfortunately, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I have not read much by Jenny, but I'm going to assume that this is, for her, a seminal work that marries poetics to prose in recognition of the changing mores of centuries, you know? It's a gentle but pointed remonstrance to Baudelaire, who succumbed to sin and died to tell of it. A prisoner of his century as well as a rebel against it, you know, capable of denying the rights of a gender kept in a prison built by men. Jenny shreds the argument from a distance of years, if the worm having turned and it has teeth capable of biting in defense of her exploits. End comment.
Nicely said. Great comment. Okay, Babbler, where would you like to go?
So I have put the next piece up on the board by Ken Smith titled A Big Yellow Ball of Fire. I will go ahead and give this one a read. So it goes like this. Big yellow ball of fire keeps our globe from a freezing death, floating and turning with a dark wound, a black hole high up in its chest that won't cover over, will not heal. A bright flickering light in a ring of stones by a tent beside a body of water. Each of us a body, wound or no wound, black hole or no hole, a body that will grow old and cold. And,
Great read. Yeah, and that was inspired by prompt 9. The poet is a kinsman in the clouds who scoffs at archers, loves a stormy day, but on the ground among the hooting crowds, he cannot walk. His wings are in the way. And I especially liked each of us a body, wound or no wound, black hole or no hole, a body that will grow old and cold. I thought it was a deeply philosophical metaphor on the impermanence of all heavenly bodies as well as our own. Very tightly done. He says quite a lot for brevity. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
He's got to get off mute.
Are you all right? Okay.
I thought I was going to have something original to say until I heard you say, what was it, a look at how impermanent we are and how, in the long run, impermanent a planet or a universe can be. Black hole or no black, a body that will grow old and cold. Yeah, that's an affirmation of age. What happened is that it's a...
Nice comment. Very well done. And Brooke, I'll give you final word as our reader.
I really like the twisting of this piece. You know, the title kind of is sewn into the right. You know, it's like the first line of it. You know, a big yellow ball of fire keeps our globe from a freezing death, which, you know, really I think starts this off nicely by saying basically it's in the process of dying. You know, we're just saved by like this giant explosion. This nuclear blast is momentarily, you know, keeping us alive. You know, and then even that sun is dying, you know. Everything's just kind of in the process of dying, you know, this momentary life, you know. The black hole is not going to heal. It's not going to close. There's no, you know, recovery of this. You know, it makes me think of, you know, the eventual heat death of the universe, right? Entropy just kind of taking over, and how it just essentially happens faster or slower with different animals. It makes me think about sometimes how I look at animals that don't live very long, you know, like a housefly that lives for 3 weeks, and how long a day must feel if your life is only 3 weeks. So I really like this, you know, just, you know, it's not particularly dark and doom and gloom feeling, you know, with the mentioning of floating and yes, it's a wound and there's a black hole, but it doesn't feel particularly dark. And yet at the same time, it feels bleak. So it's interesting to both get that hot and cold feeling from this piece. So I really thought it was a great brevity.
Nice. Great comment. Okay. And with that, where would you like to go?
I am going to put yours up on the board, and if you don't mind giving your own piece a read.
Okay.
That would be great.
Sure. Okay. So I need to refresh, I think. Yep, there it is. Okay. So... you know, Baudelaire, there were lots of ways that I could have gone, but I think that when I think of him as a poet, and you know, he was more than anything, think of him as someone that was a kind of trailblazer, a pioneer, someone that was breaking boundaries in his time, and that, you know, as you might expect, he was banned. And so that has been part of what I've tried to do in writing in my own small little way. And this piece is one of those. And it also kind of hits the concept of prose poetry as well. So it's called Beyond Insanity. Shearing gray wool frayed delusions, writing for no one, not even herself. Warm blue pens die causeless, martyred deaths without mourners, sleepless nights wasted writing, erasing, revising for readership, anchored mid-purpose, straining for fragmented words, phrases, verses, as if void was not purpose. Aluminum-foiled words poison heard thoughts, breath. Without the infestation, the enigma, the disease called poetry, she'd spit spectral rainbow contrast mid brown, earthy bowel spaces instead of pink lingerie warped pity, long, white-hot poverty, and steel-cold alienation. The red demonic child assures itself of breath as follied words fly ceaselessly, eternally free from impact landings mid pomo cosmology, beyond addictive junking neediness, needleless soft felt-tip pens without Pavlovian bells or illusory creamed filling, sore yawn British Journal of Addiction's definition rationally, reductively, as follied words flow ceaselessly. Fragment past insanity, poetic bodies senselessly scatter charnel house ethos, oh 21st century, with it with sad, sight-drenched, blind paradoxes in rational pursuit of purposelessness. Poetic mirrors dim reflect creative decomposition, unparalleled, incomparable measures, cold decomposition summoning fragmented, alienating, cyclical madness beyond insanity. Nightmare wakings, waking nightmares. All her words are repeating. Now, 21st Christed chaos poetry is birthed, is born, is fragmenting, is finished. End of poem. And move
great,
on if you
great.
Want to. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Laurent, if you want to start us off.
I will, Richard. That was an impressive read. I've used the word immersive before, but this one was immersive. Interesting that you recognize the figure as neutered, yes, neutral in terms of gender, applying to man or woman, even though I think that's generally accepted as a male picture. And that kind of goes along with the theme tonight, the place women have taken in society, the recognition of them as every man, in a manner of speaking, not to be left to the side, of poetry being, what's it, to describe poetry as an enigmatic. You got to stop with the jumping lions, my friend. Okay. A red demonic child assures itself of breath as spoiled words fly ceaselessly, eternally free from impact landings. The poem of porno cosmology is beyond addictive junking neediness. Soft felt hips, pens, without Pavlovian bells or usury, creamed filling. I'm sorry, you described poetry, I think, at some point as something of a disease that gets into you. You can't escape it, and you're going to write beautiful, beautiful things, denying what's awful, and yet falling prey to the awful itself. The nightmare wakings, the waking nightmares, as all her words are repeating, 21st century chaos poetry, I love that phrase. His birth is born, it's fragmenting, it's finished. And in a way, that's what this poem is, that chaos poetry. Chaotic, but very well managed. Well done, Richard.
Thanks so much, Laurent.
To me, it speaks of, women weren't educated in the past, and so she was writing for no one, not even for herself, and yet the freedom to do so is there. To me, it feels like, self-expression, just to express yourself without having confines of like, this should be your form or this is what you should write about. It almost feels like uneducated and therefore unbound passion as a writing, and not all feelings are good. So I love the mix of kind of the good in here with the bad, the entanglement of emotion, because it doesn't really work. It's not very black or white. I sometimes explain to people that I personally struggle to write happy poetry. And I think as a result of that, I kind of come across as looking a bit depressed, but I'm not really. I don't feel the inspiration to write poems when I'm in a good mood. So most of my writing is, like a therapeutic release of nasty shit. But this is what it kind of makes me feel, without the infestation, the enigma, the disease called poetry, she spits spectral rainbow contrasts, mid-brown earthy vowel spaces instead of pink lingerie, warped pity, long white-hot poverty and steel-cold alienation, without the ability to express herself, what other way would that come out? It has to come out some way, so why not? This disease called poetry. And so I just love this. It just feels like wild and free self-expression that is granted by being able to, 21st Christian chaos poetry is birthed, is born, is fragmenting, is finished, this wild form. And where Baudelaire seems very formulaic, it's not really the right word, but like it rhymes, it has structure, and this is very much free form style. I really enjoyed it. Wild and passionate and a bit explosive. I liked it very much.
Thanks so much. Okay, so and where would you like to go next?
I'm gonna have Laurent read his next. Hopped over them.
Great.
All right. Take it back to where I need to be. All right. Excuse me. This is called Pain of My Privilege, a Baudelairean Corruption. Deep in the sheets, my mouth worries at diseased flesh, as if it were honey in a breakfast spoon. Followed as medicine for the spirit's melancholic excesses. How vile the self-reflection of an ill-tempered ram, butting at hindquarters in an all-consuming tempest of consumption, drinking deep the nectar of evil flowers in bloom. Was this, then, the ecstasy of our fathers, thin qua non of immortal tapestries, woven and hung as a goad for the saintly to pillory, first the charnel feast for damned and bloodied souls. I inhabit a world of mean flats, dry and dustless, endlessly swept clean in preparation, secret debauchery, cleanse the horrors of boredom, wringing out my Paris spleen, scrubbing with my body at the poison of bell phantasms, who lure me with their willingness, open to thrust and parry, wits and tongue, that they sicken me unto death. Their body is a chalice I sip from, nay, gorge, as is my fashion, never fearing the chance of real life, plunging into a black cesspool of the unwashed and perfumed. fumes, bread to be broken, eaten, and shat out in the streaming liturgies of faith, whose loss is the object of my desire. Views carved from the devil's pews under a vaulted sun. My legacy, as it weeps at the headstone of a child who still lives in me, never dead, always dying, from both the horror of life and the ecstasy of life. Pain of my privilege. End quote.
What a powerful read and powerful poem that was. Thanks so much for bringing it to us. I know that what you've done here, or tried to do, but I think done successfully, is to bring us almost a bio of Baudelaire,
mm-hmm.
you know, showing the debauchery and the problems with health. He dies young, and he dies from, like, you know, a sexually transmitted disease young, and it's all there. So it's quite an ambitious piece, and I think you pull it off quite successfully in very few words, considering the enormity of the task. But we feel the debauchery. You bring us Paris in that 19th century, and there's so many good lines here. Where was it? There was the plunging into a black cesspool of the unwashed and perfumed. Boy, if that isn't Paris of the 1800s. And views carved from the devil's pews under a vaulted sun. And this is an interesting trope, too, that Baudelaire hits on, is Satan, the role of the devil in all of this. In all of this kind of seedy 19th century Paris underworld, so it's quite successful in what you carry out here.
Well, I tell you what,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. It was not something I thought I wanted to really do. Try and write in his voice in the first and second. No, it seemed to make sense to me, and I thank you for your comments. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you really did pull it off. I thought it truly had that vibe of Baudelaire, very tight and well done. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I think it held like that dark, like cloyingly velvety voice that I get from Baudelaire's style. So I think it was really well done in that way. The language chosen, I thought, was beautifully descriptive, you know, honey in a breakfast spoon, what you're talking about, diseased flesh, you know, and that kind of, I don't know, it gives it a weight that I think is really well done. And yes, it does feel like 19th century France, but there's nothing really here that ties it to that era. You know, it could be any where debaucherous, you know, behavior is occurring. You know, like, you know, is this any different really than what you would see in a modern era? You know, I've been to some raunchy parties that I've wandered into and quickly wandered out of that didn't feel so different than this. You know, these underbellies are still around. And there's nothing in the phrasing of this piece that ties it to an era except perhaps the tone. And I really particularly loved that last bit, you know, my legacy as it weeps at the headstone of a child who still lives in me, never dead, always dying from both the horror of life and the ecstasy of life, the pain of my privilege. The idea that the child is always dying, you know, caught in permanent pain, I thought felt particularly heavy, you know, because something that's dead, there's a release in that, you know, and in this, there's not. It's just tortured.
I see. You found that. You found that a little bit. Yeah, that was good.
So I thought that was a very well done and, you know, particular. But I liked this piece very much, Laurent. I thought it was very well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Babler. That was wonderful. But in response to your statement about I don't really think the world has changed much, you know, in terms of dirt and filth, et cetera. In the court of Louis the King, nobles and ladies of court would find isolated staircases and squat and shit. And that was not at all uncommon. They had no way of getting rid of it. And as a result, they were so heavily perfumed against the odor and against themselves that I'm not sure the average 21st century that person could endure it.
True, we have better plumbing.
Yeah. Yeah, those Paris sewers, hard for us to understand.
When you have millions of people shitting, I mean, it's not a small thing without plumbing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I did mention earlier in the show, you know, that I did grow up in a trailer park. And there was a time where I had to do a math assignment with someone who I didn't know well, and we were avoiding it, and it was unusual because we were both honor students. And so it came to the point where we both had to just lay it all on the table, like, why aren't we going to each other's houses, right? And my answer was that I did not have running water. So we didn't have any water in my house, so I was literally, we were all using the same toilet, and then we would go steal a 5-gallon bucket of water from the neighbor's hose and use that to flush. So my house did not smell very good. And then her, similarly, she was on a sewer that no one had cleaned in a long time, so it was backing up into every drain in her house. So that was a lovely smelling era of my childhood.
Yeah, well, then we'll make an exception in your case, how's that?
And don't forget to add mess, because that was just a permeating smell.
Yeah,
which smells like cat piss, right?
Theological poetry, come and hear it.
Okay, so I see you've got the next one up.
So the next one I've put up on the board is Beauty Undismayed by Myriad Dark, and I will go ahead and give this one a read.
Great.
Beauty Undismayed. This is the day. Unbound by shroud or wreath, a desperation now dying, keeping silent the covenant of the dead, whisper among bells pealing and secrets left strewn like corpses. This day of the dead lay scattered, not unlike scratch marks on a map that remind me of hieroglyphics, and pictures of rooms and encroaching waters, a rotoscope of dreams and an alternating afterlife. There is a beauty, undismayed by the viscera of many moments autopsied by unseen hands, and shafts of half-lit memories, flickering candles, illuminating buried secrets rotting in their caskets, piercing us like swords. Ah, sentimentality. Slumbering still in August, my derision, my evasive reality, all-consuming, ever with me, a kiss of ruptured lips with razored eyes, you, of a thousand cuts, my vestigial conscience. Today, this moment of conjecture, becoming compulsions and cravings for all things dark, my bones are bound in your city shrouds, where beauty is a trodden in corpse, even more indisposed.
Nice read there, Battler. Yeah, what a great poem this is. I thought this relatively short poem captures many of the Baudelaire tropes. Beauty, death, urban life, decadence, darkness, decay, all tightly knit. An abstract necropolis of the mind. Very nicely composed piece. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, there's some language here that is really remarkable. This day of the dead lay scattered, not unlike scratch marks on a map that reminds me of hieroglyphics and pictures of rooms and encroaching waters, a rotoscope of dreams and an alternating afterlife. He goes on to talk about Beauty Undismayed by Viscera, which speaks so well to the prompt itself. You walk on corpses, beauty undismayed. If beauty can walk undismayed in the face of ugliness, it is in recognition of herself, of himself, in many ways. Where the bones are bound towards beauty, despite the fact that it walks on corpses, I'm at a loss of exactly how to interpret what Myriad Dark is stressing, that beauty is special because it can walk amidst ugliness, or is it beauty bound ugliness because beauty eventually becomes ugly? I don't know, but it's a wonderful piece, demanding a second reading, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, certainly, I think that was one of the earmarks of Baudelaire's work, is that he's reveling in the beauty of decadence and ugliness, as opposed to being, repelled by it, repulsed by it. So I think that he captured
yeah,
that.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, yeah.
And your thoughts, Babbler?
I really liked how it's like in the midst of death, and this is what it says to me anyway, in the midst of death, there's something beautiful. There's beauty in decomposition. There's beauty in decay. There's beauty in not knowing what comes after. This day of the dead lay scattered, not unlike scratch marks on a map that remind me of hieroglyphics. And I picture just dead bodies strewn about a scene, maybe of some mass killing or a bomb explosion or something like that. And instead of getting kind of lost in the gore of it, almost staring at it with a state of wonder, And I think when I go to the last stanza that starts with "Ah, sentimentality, slumbering still in August," is like I'm still not sentimental. I'm just there's almost like a disconnect, the understanding that emotionally this is brutal, but setting that aside to just see the visual and visceral appreciation of it, and there definitely is that kind of dark style of art, the kind of gothic art that sees the beauty in those things, the beauty of death and flickering candles and, the gorgeousness of what is a funeral, and I think it's really interesting to just kind of revel in the beauty of it and set, the darker sides of it aside, emotionally, but not visually, is kind of how I take it, where beauty is a trodden in corpse, even more indisposed, not finding it ugly, not seeing the ugliness in death and decay, but the beauty instead. But not beauty as in like regrowth or rebirth, but just in decay itself. But I like it. It's very dark, but it's, it's not about mourning. There's something about it that's almost, meditational, just living in the moment of it and not really thinking about what it means, but soaking it in visually. So I enjoyed it.
Great. Yeah, great comment. Yeah, and that is a good point, is that I do think that he addresses that gothic feel that Baudelaire has. And, this is the era of
Edgar Allan Poe as well, and so you get that with Baudelaire as well. Okay, and whenever you're ready, we'll move on to our next one.
Yeah, I've put up Lost by Art Junkie, and if you'll go ahead and read that for us, Richard.
Yep, so that one has a SoundCloud, so let me pull that, pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, here it is.
Lost. My heart is lost. The beasts have eaten it. Charles Baudelaire. I can always recognize the ones who grew up without fathers, realize their sad eyes were hollowed by rejection, agate caves cored by male abandonment. Little girls without a woman's dignity fall graceless into the unworthiest arms. They're okay being held at arm's length as long as they are being held by someone. Concealing unspoken covenants of truth, lies are love offerings that can never be quit on carnal claims of ownership, knowing that belonging is not the same as possession. Those frightened wide-eyed does lost in the darkest woods are never alone. The hungry-eyed wolves circle and salivate.
There, Art Junkie, thanks so much for the audio. And Laurent, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
And doesn't this hit hard, like being smacked in the face? There's so many things in this poem that touch my heart. The ones without fathers being so immediately recognized, because if you recognize it, well, the wolves who appear at the end recognize it as well. Little girls without a woman's dignity fall graceless into the unworthiest arms. Yes, how often they're completely taken advantage of, and they don't have to be held close either. They're okay being held at arm's length. And then realizing that the belonging is not the same as possession, that despite the carnal claims of ownership and all that that implies, and they are indeed circled by wolves who are ever mindful, ever on the lookout, those frightened, wide-eyed does. What a powerful piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah. It's just, it's a painfully good poem. And the weird thing is, I grew up with my father, all of my childhood. I had a dad. But my dad, in fact, did not have a father for most of his childhood. His father didn't die. My grandfather didn't die, but he was in a TB ward before they had antibiotics that are now used to treat TB. TB is nothing now, but back then they called it the White Death. So I know a lot about sons growing up without fathers, and I can just imagine for my aunt, what it was to be a daughter growing up without a father. And I imagine that this would really hit home for her. So I really identified with this piece, very powerful. And Babbler, I'll give you final word. What'd you think?
Well, first I want to give some credit to Art Junkie for the read. I thought it was a wonderfully emotive read. There was a really interesting timbre to her voice for this, right, that I really enjoyed. But also just on the piece, when it started with the line, I can always recognize the ones who grew up without fathers. I stopped for a second because, my father passed away when I was very young. And then to go to the next line, their sad eyes were hollowed by rejection. I thought, well, this isn't really about me. I mean, I relate to the experience, but I also don't, because I wondered a lot as a kid watching people, especially who had absentee fathers or abusive fathers, and I always kind of considered myself lucky. I never had to wonder whether or not my dad wanted me, and I never had to feel abused either. you know, he passed away, so there was no choice in it. But, you know, certainly, you know, just watching, you know, like I never did anything for Father's Day. I never, you know, those were things I didn't get to experience, you know. Father-daughter dances weren't a thing I got to experience. And there was certainly a level of jealousy watching, you know, friends of mine who had good and present fathers that I did not have. But, you know, just that feeling of want, I definitely relate to, you know, and I see it in definitely my peers who grew up similarly, you know, not knowing how to be loved. And for a while, for me personally, it felt suffocating, you know, because you're not used to that. But, you know, I think that's how a lot of people do end up falling into like abusive relationships, is because they're not able to identify what that feeling is supposed to feel like. So I really enjoyed this, you know, and watching, you know, the abusers waiting to prey on those.
Baudelaire was such a wolf.
Yeah. So I thought this was really well done, and felt the emotional connection to it. So.
Comment. Okay, and where would you like to go next?
I'm going to pop up the next one right now, which is Baudelaire's Final Year by Bob Pallister. And if you want to read this one first, Richard, since that previous one had a sound cloud, that'd be great.
Okay, sure. So this is Bob Pallister. It's called Lost for Words, Baudelaire's Final Year. The voluptuous markings of quill on the page, the voluptuous soundings of words on the tongue, to aphasia lost, 45 years of age, that part of brain function gone, stroke struck and stung in brothels and gambling dens, syphilis shared, opium, alcohol, both taken to grid. A soul that is in downcastness, often despaired. Charles Baudelaire was in love with the word that could lift the mundane, making magical scenes, could weft and weave tapestries out of the grime, a fantastic filigree, nightmares and dreams, an expression of everything, life, death, and time. Time he could quicken by thinking in language. One blood vessel burst, and all of that stopped. No therapy, no cure, not even a bandage. Into a corrupt file, every single bit locked, every word, every phrase, every tongue that he'd learned in a babble of silence, both out and both in, locked from a world where he never returned, and unraveling his thoughts couldn't even begin, his mind in held doldrums of absolute still, the albatross shot, no rewriting the plot, crawled through his last year with nothing to fill, a hole his poetry now simply is not in the poem. And Laurent, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
I think I'm kind of open-mouthed with awe. What a beautiful work of poetry. It's rhyme scheme and syllable count. Descriptions are kind of breathtaking in a way, because if he says that Charles Baudelaire was in love with a word that could fit that could lift the mundane, making magical scenes, could weft and weave tapestries out of the grime, and you know express to us his ability to take any moment, no matter how mean, no matter how small, no matter how dirty, and give it a voice that made it interesting, vibrant, alive, almost transcendent. well, his poetry doesn't fall far behind what Baudelaire did. Good Lord, what a work. Bravo.
Amazing, right? Yeah. And Babbler, what'd you think?
Yeah, I really liked this as well. Like Laurent pointed out, the rhyming and the pacing of it was beautifully done, you know, and to tell this story, you know, to open up, first of all, the title is great, you know, Lost for Words, is a great title for this piece, you know, and then to talk about, you know, how he lost language, to aphasia lost, 45 years of age, and then to kind of go through that story, to like take you through it, you know, this soul in downcastness that often despaired, you know, but he was in love with the word, you know, to weave beautiful poetry out of, you know, ugliness, out of darkness, out of grime, you know, to make filigree, nightmares and dreams, you know, I thought it was just really well expressed, you know, the use of words here was absolutely excellent, you know, and then to talk about, you know, to be, lose the ability to use language, you know, when that's such a key part of somebody's personality. Sometimes I wonder what it feels like, you know, and I think I know in some ways, because especially when I'm going through, like a depressive episode, I struggle to find words. I know the word, but I can't find it. You know, it's like flipping through a Rolodex in my mind. It takes me a minute to get there, and then the card's gone. You know? And I imagine what that would be like if it were every single word. You know, if I couldn't find alternatives, if I couldn't find similar words, if I couldn't even find words to ask what word is this, you know, the level of frustration that would have on me, you know, it makes me think, you know, locked from a world where he never returned. I particularly loved the additional rhyming that happened in those last few lines. The albatross shot, no rewriting the plot, crawled through his last year with nothing to fill the hole where his poetry now simply was not. That triple rhyme where you get the midline rhyme with shot, I think is particularly effective because it makes it feel like the poetry picks up a pace without sacrificing the rhyme scheme or the cadence. So I thought this was beautifully well crafted. The story was wonderfully told, and the word choice was fantastic. So excellent job from Bob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of you have really great comments, and I too was impressed by this piece. On my first read as well, but when I think about the skill to tell Baudelaire's demise story within his biography and do it in lyrical fashion like that, was quite an accomplishment. Strong biography of Baudelaire's illness and how it impeded his art, wonderfully emotive, sans any kind of sappiness. Which, of course, you know, the whole idea of sappiness in poetry is anti-Baudelairean. And the powerful lyricism, I thought, was quite appropriate for the subject matter and really added to the vibe of the piece. Very well done. Okay, and what's up next?
I'm going to pop up my piece, which was late. I wrote it, and then I realized I never actually put it in there. So I did that. So I'll read mine, because I think we're at the end of the entries for this contest, and now it's carryovers, if I'm reading that list correctly. So I put mine up, which is called Buttercup. It was written to prompt 8. Is a small child, I felt in my heart 2 contradictory feelings, the horror of life and the ecstasy of life. Stuff like this. Little yellow weeds coming up from the mud, ranunculus, swarming a stump whose roots tickle my father's cremains, capturing sunshine by the rotting log outside the little cabin, devoured by the forest, Joyce slickened by the endless rain of my mother's grief, sliding down the eaves of a decaying dream to mingle with earwigs. Bare feet wriggling, mud climbing up between little toes, calluses coated in worms, broken beer bottles, sharp gravel, thick enough to carry me here, to the rotting stump where my childhood wails, strangled in a nest of bright yellow buttercups. End poem.
Wow. What a beautiful read and powerful write. So normally I read these beforehand. Obviously, I didn't have a chance to do that with this one, but I'm going to kind of wing it off the top of my head. And I will say that it is powerfully emotive. My father's cremains brings us so much emotion and identification. And then the decay, the decadence is present, and that too is the Baudelairean trope. And then I loved how you bring the emotion and have it come through the rain. Joust slickened by the endless rain of my mother's grief. And I like that it's kind of a, double entendre, that the rain obviously is a physical, natural phenomena, but simultaneously it's the rain of your mother's grief, that, the rule of grief in her life. So there's just so much here in this relatively short poem, and it's quite beautiful. And I think that too is a great nod to Baudelaire's craft, that you capture the beauty in the horror of life, and it's a strong confessional poem. So really well done, and thanks so much for bringing it to us. And Laurent, your thoughts?
It's kind of stunning, this wife that takes in an entire early life, which was perhaps rudely lived, by that I mean plainly, heavy with death and grief, a child that remembered wailing, strangling in that nest of buttercups. It was, and this life remembered simply in that image of the yellow buttercups, which you initially described as little yellow weeds, ranunculus swarming a stump. I give a mwah to that kind of alliteration. Just wonderfully done. And then tying it to your father, and tying that to the cabin and its condition and your condition and the surrounding environments, returning to the bright yellow buttercups, just makes a complete circle and kind of leaves you silent at the end of reading it, because it's so rich with its emotional detail, not let alone the physical detail that you give us in this piece, that it's what I'm going to remember. Marvelous.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay,
I just felt silly that right before the show, I was like, I was looking at it. I'm like, oh, I wrote it and then just left it in my draft. Go me. Sorry, I didn't get a pre-read. I'm like, oh, poop. There is one more called Winds of Change by Weaver of Dreams, and I believe this one has a sound cloud. So
It does. So let me pull that.
I try to maintain a pseudo-humanoid facade. Never easy when an evil denizen of the dank, deep corridors of hell screams inside your mind. Kill, kill now, with a counter-melody always playing in the background. Gouge out the eyes, cut out the tongue, stab, stab, then begins the fun. There it was, a vile, vicious, vapid, vainglorious entity, telling me how much better my life could be if only I would listen to the advice it gave me. Its voice was slick and slimy as it tapped against the walls of my mind, trying to find a weakness to exploit. I'd always presumed we each had a demon to battle. Then I sensed only a few carried that inescapable, putrid odor with them. The rest were just humans, with a conscience of sorts. There must be a solution. I had to keep at bay this insidious voice, or be driven insane. Then within the screams of hatred, I heard the sound of large wings, gently beating, softly waffling. Here was a breeze that lifted the smell of death and decay to drift and deploy. The breeze moves faster, sweeping all away, leaving blessed silence, but for the sound of wings.
Great sound cloud there, Weaver. Babbler, your thoughts on this?
I enjoyed the initial darkness of this one. You maintain a pseudo-humanoid facade. You know, so not even feel human, just be trying to look human, you know, look passable. While your mind is battling, you know, this voice that tells you to kill and gouge out eyes and do gruesome things. And you get that beautiful alliteration of vile, vicious, vapid, vainglorious entity, which is just fun to read and fun to see, you know, and then realizing that not everyone is dealing with this in their minds, you know, that only a few carried that inescapable putrid odor with them. You know, the rest were just humans. You know, knowing that you weren't human to begin with, you know, makes me think of, like, intrusive thoughts, you know, which not everyone gets, but a lot of people do. And sometimes they're such dark and horrible things, they are quite literally unspeakable. So I enjoyed that kind of relation to this piece as well. And then that sudden changing, you know, the large wings gently beating, softly wafting, you know, to be carrying off this as a, with a breeze, you know, and it makes me wonder a little bit, you know, what this change is. You know, is it the idea of an angel? Is it passing away? Is it just coming out of, you know, a terrible mental state? You know, and it's not really resolved here, but I don't mind that, you know, it being left open-ended, exactly what these wings that carry off the nasty, insidious, putrid odor. But the language is wonderful, and to give it a little bit of a lighter spin than the bottle liner version, I liked it as a take on the prompt.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. Yeah, I like that when we have the ambiguity presented to us, because it does kind of have that gothic feel to it. And I thought this was a laudable take on the prompt. I felt that Weaver had us living inside of Baudelaire's skull for a couple of minutes, struggling with the demon, with that inescapable putrid odor, with the insidious voice. I also liked the victorious closing stanza. Here was a breeze that lifted the smell of death and decay to drift and deploy. The breeze moved faster, sweeping away, leaving blessed silence, but for the sound of wings. Really nice. And Laurent, I'll give you a final word on the piece.
Thank you. If sex and drugs are weaknesses of the flesh, I can certainly imagine that urge to murder, put out the tongue, stab, is also a weakness of the flesh, but characterized as an evil entity, not some alien being, but your other self. It is inescapably you. But then to turn things around and let us hear the sound of large wings, the implication of an angel as a breeze lifting the smell of death and decay is well done, the hint in leaving blessed silence, but for the sound of wings. Very capable, right?
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Babbler.
Well, before we go on, I guess I have a question for you, Richard. Do you want to hit the carryovers from your Tim Winton and then finish up Bottle Air next time?
Yeah, here's the thing. I thought that I'd hold back some of the Wintons because Neutron was under the weather a couple of weeks ago, and it would give her a chance to talk about him. But at this point, I feel like we owe it to the poets to have their poetry read on the air. So, yeah, let's go ahead and finish up the carryovers.
Sounds like a plan to me. So I've put up a piece by Colap and Laurent, if you wouldn't mind giving that a read. Be much appreciated.
With great honor. I like Colap. Is Baudelaire then going to be a two-parter?
So we're going to have some carryovers. There's definitely no question about that.
Okay. No, I just thought that I wasn't sure whether you were going to make it a two-parter or just carryovers. Okay, no problem.
We could. It was Colette. Very popular. Filled up quick.
It did, didn't it? This is the quiet lady returns home. Ah, Colette. Darkness slowly envelops a perfect pomegranate dusk. The sound of last satin sunrays flashing, sweeping the horizon's dust. A ball gown trailing at the end of a done-nothing day. Her silence is filled with a yawn, the stretching of slender arm rays, the butt end of day's hubbub snubbed, crushed under the leather heels of night's patent boots. Hush, let me hear its last embers ringing in my ears as quiet as passed across roofs and eaves. As smoke snakes its way upwards from chimneys to the heavens, a faint smell of beer stew brewing, and the sound of shuffling, a city shoes are left to rest in exchange for comfortable cushioned slippers to glide on wooden parquet floor. The day has completed its work. The soul cannot put itself to rest on the immense heat of the table. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, this is just, it's a testament to the power of these contests and the quality of the rights we get. This is another one that in many other contests, this would have been a gold medalist. I thought it was filled with lovely alliterations and assonance throughout, clever wordplay to create an emotive poem and a nice riffing off of the prompt. And the prompt was, I came home at dusk with my ears ringing from the quiet. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really liked this piece. You could feel the quiet. I loved the personification of the sunset as a start, this perfect pomegranate dusk, the last satin sun rays, sashing, sweeping horizons dust. The alliteration is beautifully done. And to describe it as a ball gown trailing at the end of a done-nothing day. I love the idea of a done-nothing day. It speaks to that almost kind of gross level of wealth, you know, and it's really referred to many times here. You know, it's called a lady. We're talking about satin, and we're talking about ball gowns, and we're talking about leather heels and patent boots, and, you know, all of these things that scream wealth, you know, so a done nothing day. And yet she still needs to relax, you know. it's just kind of a funny concept, but, you know, that heaviness of dusk is just really palpable. And I just love the word choice really does it for me in this piece. You know, the city shoes, the beautiful touches of alliteration, you know, comfortable cushions. It's just wonderfully interwoven to really set this mood, you know, of a dusk and a silence from a, you know, in a wealthy estate. It's beautifully done. I'm a big fan of Collapse, so I really enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment. Yeah, me as well. And Laurent, I will give you final word.
Yeah, I'll first of all agree with everything that Baffert said. It was a day described in such creative language, sibilant, gliding through its alliteration and metaphors, chameleon-like, pulled from a world shuffling into the end of its day in the silence. I really like this piece.
Absolutely. Great comments. Okay, Babbler, I think we have another, at least one more of the carryovers.
We do. I've put up a poem by Hats called Hailstorm of Lust, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Time ramifies from summer, flirts with the young wine, rip roaring. Hold the bottle. Don't leave it in the sun for too long in the back seat of the car. I harvest my juicy dreams on the autumn terrace, mighty Bacchus, as if I'm daughter of the naughty Eros, my Cupid Muerte, beast of polyamory, stalking with a hot gaze his squinted brown eyes like a prairie wolf, inhales through the nostrils, warmth of the breath paralyzes my breath and intertwines into one. Grin of the moon chases the stars out of view. The earth spins on the young wine, and hell is resting when the night is blackest and wettest in the crotch. He mends me with bending and fills me up whole. I bloom with every surrender. End poem.
Nice read. Yeah. And this was prompt for, I just sit here and tell the story as though I can't help it. There's always something in the day that reminds me, that sets me off all hot and guilty and scared and rambling and wistful like I am now. I thought it was tight poetry throughout. I especially like stalking with a hot gaze, his squinted brown eyes. A prairie wolf inhales through the nostrils. Warmth of the breath paralyzes my breath and intertwines into me. Strong similes and metaphors made for some steamy word painting, and I thought it was very nicely done. Excellent. And I see we gave it a jade medallion. Well deserved. And Laurent, I will give you final word.
You attract such good poetry in the shows, I swear. Looking for a way to characterize this. I think it's through the title Hailstorm of Lust. He marries wine, mighty Bacchus, as if she were the daughter of the naughty Eros. And then my Cupid Muerte, beast of polyamory, a beast of many romances, many entanglements, many encounters, and describes that prairie wolf stalking with a hot gaze. And that line, when the night is blackest and wettest in the crops, he mends me with bending and fills me up whole. Wow. Just, to me, it was darkly sensual and very hot. When I say darkly, not darkly, but well, it bordered on it. I don't know why I feel that way, but it did and succeeded. Great piece.
Absolutely. And if we can have the next one in the carryover, Barry Babbler.
Absolutely. So I've put up Live and Let Die by If Your Abs. You want to go ahead and read that, Richard?
Sure. So this is Live and Let Die by If Your Abs. The morning slips, a leather green sundress on the ocean. Breakers roar fish stories, whales tales of pirate ships and sunken chests. My eyes leap over the horizon for a meet and greet in the Azores, Spain, England, the French Riviera, the Alps for poems, songs, yodelay, hee-hoo, that echo sometimes stutter vibrations on a blue pond, change colors and bardos of arcing lives and death. As we ride on the solar merry-go-round, my tan skin feels the sea breeze kick in, and I'm 30 again at the scavenger bar, high on smoke from thin white nails rolled and bagged by my bro. And now, as then, I'm breathing the world's cleanest air and seeing through an herb-filtered lens. A beach's energy brings magnetic flux from pole to pole, beginnings, endings, births, suicides, banjo strings twanging, returned envelopes, cork messages in a wine bottle set bobbing in salt straits. The stars ascent circles every step, every glance, every kiss, every skipped heartbeat, and every orgasm until you've written your last novel, calm after the storm, ready to let go of the tow rope that ties us to earth and sail into the bardo of dying, arms no longer paddling as driftwood fuel for the next welking plane. End of poem. And Babbler, I'll give you first word on this piece.
I really loved this. I mean, even just from that first line, the morning slips, a leather green sundress on the ocean. What a gorgeous image to start this off with. And I can see it, you know, from having lived on the beach for so long. You know, I always seem to find myself somewhere coastal. So I loved that, you know, to then spin through all of these different places and just paint all these brief snippets. It's like flipping through Polaroids. Is just beautifully done, you know, and then to get into your 30s and you're smoking on weed and just enjoying life. And again, just more flipping through this stack of experiences. And really, I mean, isn't that life summed up? And then to get to the end and slow down, you know, sail into the bardo of dying, arms no longer paddling as driftwood. Fuel for the next welkin plane, and to view it as cyclical and relaxing. I think it's just beautiful intermixing of pacing that almost feels like its own ebb and tide, but it's just scattered. Beautiful images. I love this piece.
Great comment. So, Laurent, your thoughts on this piece?
Beach's energy brings magnetic flux from pole to pole, beginnings, endings, births, suicides, banjo strings twanging. Returned envelopes, corked messages in a wine bottle, set bobbling in salt straits. So much of this poem, in fact, the entire poem, is like a vision from my childhood. It's a poem that dances the earth. It's rooted in sea and sand, and eventually onto death, where we pass as driftwood. Fuel for the next welcome plane. And the writing is remarkable. Imagery is, I think, deeply contemporary, yet it carries with it the history of every poet he's ever read, because none of it feels out of place. Bits of it slip into classical language. But basically, what I like about If Your Abs poetry, among many other things, is his his feel for contemporary language, but delivered in a way that satisfies desire for things we may have heard in this past. I don't know how to say that. Great piece.
Yeah, no, I think you said it really well. He has this kind of immediacy and kind of pulse for pop culture, and simultaneously his work roars with the canon of world literature. So his work is powerful no matter what, but this one in particular was jaw-droppingly good, and I love poems about the ocean, and holy hell, the ocean's roar comes through in this universal and simultaneously intimate poem of tides, time, and the sea. Proteus, Poseidon, and Davy Jones are all aboard in this piece, and just very well done, and a well-deserved gold medal for this piece. It's the winner of our Winton, and a good way to close our evening, rounding us out and completing our carryovers. And of course, we'll have carryovers for Baudelaire, but that is to be expected just because the poetry that he commanded and that came from his prompts was so deep that, you know, you can't just do a one-line comment, and I think everyone understands that. So, as opposed to trying to squeeze another one in 3 minutes, I think we probably call it a night, and let me say my thank yous. So first, I'd like to thank Laurent for joining us, and special thanks to Babbler for stepping in quite admirably and very skillfully for our healing friend, Neutron Bomb, who hopefully will be back on board in 2 weeks. My appreciation goes to you both, and always to Fill My Eyes for all the background work that she does to make this ship sail smoothly through the night. Join us in a half an hour for Pam Ray's show. It's coming up. And final thanks, as always, goes to the poets that write every 2 weeks for these shows. Without you guys, there is no show. So sincere thanks go out to you guys each and every time we do one of these. And in addition, since I do have a little less than a minute, I will say please join us on Friday night, tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, for open mic. I saw, Laurent, you put a piece up there, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you put on the board.
Yes, indeed. Looking forward to reading it.
Absolutely. All right. So I think that does it for us. And please stick around half an hour. Pam Ray's show's coming up. All right. Have a good night, everyone. Thanks again.
Night, everybody.
Night, guys. Thoroughly enjoyable.